if you're in the car with somebody or at home or in the office, you can say this out loud. If you're alone, just say it in your own head. Answer this question for me. What is the world's best society? Or what is the highest functioning country in the world? There actually isn't a simple answer to that, and there are a lot of variables, but I bet that you either said or at least considered a Scandinavian country. Is that a myth or is it true? And if they are the ultimate societies, what can we learn from them? Andrew Scott is a professor of politics and policy at Deakin University and an expert on public policy in Scandinavia. He'll be addressing the Newcastle Institute shortly, but has joined us in studio. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Aaron.
They have a reputation, do they not?
They do have a reputation for having high levels of income equality, low levels of child poverty, extensive support for parents and other features which make them more cohesive societies that we can learn a lot from.
What is a day living in a Finland, a Denmark, a Norway? How is that different, apart from the climate and temperature and how many layers you need to put on? How does moving through life in a country like that differ from moving through life in a country like ours?
Well, I think one of the big things is that working life is still got reasonable boundaries around it. Work-life balance is a key feature. The workforce participation rates are actually higher in those countries, and that helps underpin the tax revenue, which then provides things like free higher education and so on, which we've lost in Australia. So the working day ends at a certain time, and you have your time for leisure, and you have your weekend. And many people would say in Australia we've lost some of that work-life balance. We've lost a lot of it, in fact, through work intensification and harder to put boundaries around work and life. I think that's one of the huge differences.
How does that affect quality of life? Because we're often painted this picture of how people in these countries enjoy a very high quality of life, but certainly most of the people who are listening at their desk right now, unable to get home even though they might have knocked off at 5 o'clock, aren't doing it for love. They're doing it because they think that's how you get ahead and afford the quality of life for your family that we dream of.
Well, that's true, yes. I mean, you know, Australia and Sweden and Denmark, Norway and Finland all have people who are well motivated to work, who work hard to get ahead. Work is part of life, but work is not all of life. And it's important that people enjoy their work. They're actually more productive if they enjoy their work, if they're well motivated. It's important that parents have time off when they have newborn babies. And one of the things Sweden has, for example, is up to 16 months paid parental leave, of which a minimum should be taken by the father. A minimum of 2 months, I should say, should be taken by the father. So it's not just maternity leave, it's paid parental leave, and it's substantial. Now, people might think that if you offer that extensive paid parental leave that people will take advantage of it, not return to the workforce. Actually, the opposite is true. More people come back to the workforce. Sweden's women's workforce participation is the highest in the world. And in Australia, we've got a problem where for many women, it's not worth re-entering the workforce because the costs of privatised childcare are so high that it's not worth returning to work. Wages aren't high enough, so you don't get ahead that way.
Here is the economic reality. Services such as those, support such as that, cost money. Inevitably, that means a higher amount of the money earned going back in taxes. And that gets to the heart of the philosophy of a society. What we believe of our money belongs to us and what we believe belongs to the government. I've mounted that as a statement. Let me restate it as a question. Is that indeed where the point of difference lies or where the challenge lies?
There's a challenge there for Australia. Australia is a low-tax country. Australia has a revenue problem. We've had government after government promising to get us to surplus, but they can't do it because they refuse to seriously tackle the inadequacy of revenue in Australia. We're at 35% of gross domestic product paid in tax. The Nordic countries are above 50%. And the point, however, is that they've had those high taxes for a long time, and people in those countries know that for that they get good services. They get free higher education. They get good quality schools. They get paid parental leave. They get skills retraining if they lose a job. Denmark talks about flex security, not job security, but employment security. In Australia, we've got one of the lowest unemployment payments in the world. It's below the poverty line, and it's catastrophic to lose your job. People who lose a job are desperate to get another one because it's hard to tide yourself over. In Denmark, the approach is to invest and provide a replacement wage which underpins skills retraining, which can lead to a longer sustained career. So people will be reluctant to pay more tax if they feel they're not getting something back. But if they are getting something back, there's plenty of evidence, and it's growing, that two-thirds of Australians want to pay more tax if they are confident that the money will go into good quality public transport, health, education and so on.
There has been a conversation running a couple of generations, maybe 30 years, in countries like Australia, the UK, and I feel like the conversation is happening still aggressively in the United States around this idea of do I get better value by the government keeping more of my money and providing a service, or do I get better value by that money coming to me and there being a competitive corporate environment to provide me that service? What, if anything, do the Nordic or Scandinavian countries have to illuminate that issue?
Well, I think, you know, there's some areas that may be better provided by the private sector, but there's some areas that aren't. And I think we've mentioned early childhood education and care. It's a real problem of affordability and accessibility for working parents in Australia, and also of quality. One of the stark statistics is that in Sweden, infant mortality is much lower than Australia. Only 2 for every 1,000 births. In Australia, it's nearly 4. So it's nearly double. And that's not because we have higher Indigenous mortality, although that's a huge problem in Australia. The point is that if you have a strong public system of prenatal care and postnatal care and paid parental leave, and you get children into early childhood education and care quality settings, and you value early childhood educators and school teachers as an important profession, then that sets them up very well for the rest of their lives. And America, of course, doesn't do that. America's very, very disfigured by inequality. We're somewhere in between. Australia, we have aspects that America doesn't have, like universal Medicare, and we have an age pension, which is substantially universal, but that's about it. Universal welfare provision in some of those other areas, like early childhood education and care and paid parental leave, could improve Australia's position to underpin greater success here.
You're with Aaron Carney on ABC Newcastle Drive. So too Andrew Scott, Professor of Politics and Policy at Deakin University, who is speaking at the New Institute tonight on what, if anything, we can learn or perhaps avoid from the experience of Scandinavian countries and the Nordic countries, who are so often held up as the ultimate in a functioning society. I'm interested, even in the US context, you have a Bernie Sanders type figure who is standing quite aggressively, even though socialism is almost a dirty word in the United States, he's standing on a quite grand socialist or socialism platform and providing a very stark choice to somebody like Trump. We have an impending federal election here. There is nobody, the Greens may at the edge, but there is nobody at the forefront of their economic policy genuinely standing up and presenting a high tax, high service platform for our political future. Is there?
No, not quite like that. But I think it's positive that the Labor Party in opposition has proposed some revenue changes. Negative gearing on taxes is a significant one, the dividend imputation changes and so on, because that's showing some recognition and courage to tackle these issues. The idea that you can't talk about tax and pretend that we've got enough revenue, those days are past. It doesn't add up. It's an arithmetic fact. You cannot achieve economic objectives unless you raise enough revenue. Bernie Sanders, the kind of socialism, if we use that word, he's talking about is social democracy, and he talks about the Nordic countries quite a bit. It's about a balance between public and private. It's about corporations contributing to the society from which they make great profits. Norway, for example, ensures that its natural resource wealth is profitably extracted by international companies, but that they pay a fair share of tax and they bank the proceeds from that into the famous sovereign wealth fund, which is over $1 trillion, which underpins the government spending on things like free higher education.
How would that correlate with something like our futures fund here in Australia as a potential source of revenue for funding some of this stuff?
Well, the Future Fund is good as far as it goes, but it's very small compared to the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund. And we missed an opportunity with the last commodity boom to do something with resources taxation. The Henry Review recommended a resources super profits tax.
I remember.
You remember that?
And that it was a gentler time, as I recall.
Well, it wasn't too gentle for a few people, but that didn't happen. Mm. But it also recommended a reduction in company tax. Now, unfortunately, various employer groups then went and continued campaigning for the reduction in company tax, but they conveniently didn't mention resource companies contributing more as part of the deal. And so we've lost that opportunity, but there is now a new opportunity to put policies in place for the next commodity resources boom to get a fairer contribution from very wealthy companies and individuals to the society of which they're part and to whom they owe an obligation.
Perhaps you have just answered this question, but if there was one thing that you've witnessed in your study and research that is happening in those countries that is not happening here, that you would transport here tomorrow if you had the capacity, what would it be?
It would be that network. If it was one thing, and it's hard to choose one, of course.
Indeed.
It would be that network of investment in early years. And that goes with the evidence from American economists and so on, Nobel Prize winning economists, that a dollar spent on early years is many, many dollars saved from later remedies of the kind we see in America. Unfortunately, that's spent on prisons and trying to fix the problems, the consequences of an inadequate health system. So investment in the early years, setting children up for good lives, that's what I'd take.
Fascinating topic. So much to learn. Having worked in development overseas, in developing countries for the last 4 years as my job, it was stark to me how, from my childhood, we talked about building a new Australia, building a society. These were words that were commonplace. It's disappeared from our vernacular. It's still happening out there. They genuinely have conversations about how you build a better Vanuatu or a better Papua New Guinea. And I think it's a really important conversation for us to reintroduce. And you'll be having that conversation tonight. Thanks for giving us a glimpse at your thoughts this afternoon.
Thank you, Aaron.
That is Andrew Scott, Professor of Politics and Policy at Deakin University, who will be speaking up the Newcastle Institute tonight about what we can take and what we can leave from the Scandinavian society building.